Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the ISP Task Force meeting. We have a very full agenda today, so we will go ahead and get started with a quick roll call. Ken Palmoto?
Here.
Susan Lane?
Good morning.
Neil Jain, I believe he said he is going to be absent today. Arian Malik? Absent as well. Andy Trescott? Clint McDonald? Cynthia Fisher?
Present.
She's on. David McCauley?
I'm here.
Edward Jones? Carrie O'Malley? Les Leonard? Jack Soule? Josh Watwani? Ram Charam? Ricky Bloomfield? Sasha Termont?
Present.
Scott Weingarten? Cheryl Turney? Tamer Pakowry? Tina Esposito? Hi. Tina? No. Valerie Gray? Here. Victor Lee?
Here.
Is anyone else on that I have not announced? At this time, I will turn over to our co-chairs, Ken and Stephen, for a few words before we get started.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for showing up this morning. We really appreciate it, both our task force members and all the members of the public that that we can see who are on the line, many of whom are friends and some of whom I've never met before. So really appreciate people's interest in this topic. This, of course, is the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force, and as you can see from the agenda, we're going to be talking about medication data, specifically in the area of formulary, benefits, and price data. This is a piece of a journey that we're on, trying to dig deep into the standards and the implementation specifications related to the interoperability of medications data. So we have Margaret Weicker from NCPDP, Ryan Howells from Karen. We have a team from SureScript and Dr. Nguyen from DaVinci, all of whom are going to take us at breakneck speed through what they're doing and what they perceive as the standards challenges that they're facing. And then we'll have time for a discussion and public comment. So Ken, would you like to add to that?
No, look forward to everyone's insights into this topic.
So if we go on to the next slide, just to remind all of us on the task force, as well as our visitors, that the charge of our task force, pretty much directly from 21st Century Cures, is to make recommendations on priority uses of health IT and the associated standards and implementation specs that support these uses. So we have done a fair bit of work in this area. If you go to the next slide, you'll just see quickly who is on the task force and what organizations we each represent. And remember that these task forces are simply to the HITAC and subsequently to the ONC, and we don't really have any power unto ourselves. Though it's a great opportunity to provide input. On the next slide, next couple of slides, you'll see a little bit of what our journey has been, just to put you in, orient you to our timeline. We started last summer. We spent some time figuring out what directions we wanted to go in, what were the priority areas we wanted to focus on. We spent quite a bit of time looking at orders and results and developed some recommendations that were then shared with the HITAC. We then went on to discussing referrals and care coordination, and similarly finalized a set of recommendations. On the next slide, you can see where we've been this year and really decided to focus in on medications and medication data as the third major area that we're going to be looking at. And we are due to develop and present final recommendations back to the HITAC in the September-October timeframe. So that's where we're at, and we're focusing in on medications today. So next slide is really just to orient us to this phase of the medication work. We did do quite a bit of work already looking at issues related to discrete SIGs, challenges related to medication reconciliation, have developed some draft recommendations that have been shared with the HITACC regarding price transparency and access to PDMP data, data standards required to support prior authorization, and again, some of the challenges related to free text versus discrete SIGs. One final recommendation that we've developed has to do with e-prescriptions that are sent to one pharmacy and then need to be forwarded to another pharmacy due to availability or some other, you know, patient convenience, et cetera, and looking hopefully to NCPDP to help us with determining where standards are needed or implementation guides to be able to support that kind of a workflow. So that's kind of where we've been. And as I said, at this point, what we want to do is take advantage of our guests, the first of whom is Margaret Weicker, who comes to us from NCBDP. And for each of these, you know, brief but meaty presentations, our hope is to really understand the organization that's being represented, the work that they've done, and how it has been informed by the standards or lack thereof related to medication data. And how we, as a task force, might be able to make recommendations, weigh in regarding standards that need to be implemented, expanded, developed, et cetera, to help to move this corner of the industry forward. Ken, do you want to add to that before we turn it over to Margaret?
No, I think this group has done a lot of great work and are doing a lot of great work, so we look forward to hearing about it.
So, Margaret, thank you again for joining us. And if you can introduce yourself to the group, and you've now got 11 whole minutes to take us through an introduction to NCPDP.
Great. Thank you. I'm Margaret Weicker, Director of Standards Development at NCPDP. Next slide. NCPDP is a not-for-profit, multi-stakeholder forum for developing and promoting industry standards and business solutions that improve patient safety and health outcomes while also decreasing cost. The work of the organization is accomplished through its members who bring expertise and diverse perspectives to the forum. As an ANSI-accredited standards development organization, NCPDP uses a consensus-building process to create national standards for real-time electronic exchange of healthcare information. Healthcare. Through our collaborative problem-solving forum, we also develop and standardize best practices for product labeling, dosing instructions, patient communication and education, and other practices important in safeguarding patients. Our data products developed by industry for industry help support the important work of our members. Next slide. NCPDP has a standard called the Formulary and Benefit Standard. It is a widely used standard in the industry and is mandated for use under Medicare. The Formulary and Benefit Standard provides a standard means for the pharmacy benefit payers to communicate formulary and benefit information to prescribers via technology vendor systems. Next slide. A formulary is a list of prescribable drugs and products published by a health plan, a benefit manager, or a payer. Each product within a formulary is assigned a formulary status and a numeric preference level. The formulary status has three aspects for each product. Is it reimbursable? Is it on formulary? And is it more or less preferred than other products on the formulary? The numeric preference level provides additional detail within the same formulary status. Coverage information qualifies the condition under which the patient's pharmacy benefit covers a product. For instance, a product may may be covered only for patients under a certain age or of a certain gender. Other products may be covered up to a certain quantity. Payers can communicate the following coverage factors: prior authorization flag and routing processors, step therapy flag and explicit list of step therapy products, age limits, gender limits, and quantity limits. Product exclusions, specialty product benefit indicator, and messaging are also included. Copay information describes the cost to the patient, the extent to which the patient is responsible for the cost of a prescription. The specification supports multiple ways to state this cost, including a flat copay or dollar amount, percentage copay, a combination of flat and percentage, a copay tier, minimum and maximum copays, day supply per stated copay, copay differences by type of dispensing pharmacy, minimum and maximum retail allowances, quantity-based copay, benefit stages, minimum and maximum age limit copays, approximate total cost range, which refers to the combined total price that the plan and patient must pay to purchase a product, and also there is a capability to lift a copay-specific text message. There also is a place to provide alternatives as well as then their formulary status, numeric preference level, coverage information, and copay information. The formulary and benefits standard is a batch standard, which means the file is transmitted to the vendor partner, which then in turn uploads it or has the provider incorporated into their practice management system. Also, the formulary and benefit standard is not patient specific. Next slide. The other current standard that can list pricing transparency is the telecommunication standard. And that standard is adopted under HIPAA and widely used today as well. It's a standard format for the submission of a drug claim or other transactions between a pharmacy provider and a PBM or insurance carrier or a TPA. That standard also has transactions for eligibility, prior authorization, and information reporting. Next slide. The telecommunication standard version D0 is the one that's currently adopted under HIPAA. This will tell the pharmacy how much they're going to get paid, and then it also provides patient pay amount information, such as the amount of copay, coinsurance, deductible, sales tax, any amount that's attributed to product selection, such as the patient prefers to have the brand versus the generic and the difference associated with making that selection. It also can provide information in regard to provider network, coverage gaps as well. Next slide. Version F2 of the telecommunication standard is the one that NCPDP has asked to be adopted under HIPAA, but we are still awaiting the NPRM from HHS on that. For this standard, there are additional patient pay components that we have added since version D0, and that has to do with the changing landscape of products and offerings in the industry today. For example, there's now a grace period, a catastrophic benefit. We've also added other patient payer responsibility amounts and spend down as well. There are additional formulary alternatives that are returned in the version D0. It basically does provide the formulary alternative, but it basically gives you a drug name, a description, and an amount. For the version F2, it provides benefit tiers, reason code of why this alternative may be better than the one that the physician prescribed, It also can provide therapy time, duration, maximum and minimum age, and maximum and minimum amount for day supply. Next slide. NCPDP is in the process of bringing forward to ballot what we call the real-time prescription benefit standard. We expect this standard to go out to ballot after our August work group meeting, which is the first week in August. This standard was developed to meet two industry needs. One, to facilitate the ability of the pharmacy benefit payer, manager, or processor to communicate the formulary and benefit information to providers in a real-time mode as well as patient-specific. And, of course, any standard is created to ensure a consistent implementation throughout the industry. Next slide. The real-time prescription benefit standard obviously contains coverage indicators, alternative pharmacies, estimated patient pay components, therapy time, duration and period, maximum age, as I said, the amount, and it does provide very detailed alternative product information. Next slide. One of the challenges that we're facing in regard to the real-time benefit standard is whether to include the what's called the full negotiated price. In the CMS final rule, they determined not to mandate the use or the inclusion of a full negotiated price. As you can see, there were a lot of opposition, and there still is a lot of opposition in regard to including that amount in the standard. At this point in time, we are going to include that field in the standard, and we are most likely going to make it either situational or not used. That is still being discussed. But we felt that by adding the field now, if changes are made either through CMS or other means, it would provide the field in the standard, and we would just have to go in and update the situation or actually make it used from not used. So that is the information that CMS included in the final rule around the full negotiated price. Next slide. The other challenge has to do with the ONG rule, and it has to do with the safe harbor and chargebacks and rebates. NCPDP did comment to this rule, and we proposed three approaches or methods to support their definition of chargeback and how this could work in the industry. And this does impact patient savings, as well as then how it's reported, as well as how the pharmacy handles the chargeback or rebate. So that's, we're waiting again on that final rule in regard to any changes. You know, do they adopt one of our approaches? Do they go a totally different way? Or do they adopt some combination of our approaches? And based upon that, that will determine which way we go. We have already placed in the standard some qualifiers that can support this based upon our approaches that we proposed, but we may have to remove them or make additions to them depending upon what the final rule is in regard to that. So there's a couple of challenges waiting on this particular one, a final rule, as well as then do we go ahead and include the full negotiated price in the real-time benefit standard. So that concludes my presentation. And there's my
Margaret, thank you. Thank you so much. That was very thorough and exactly on the mark for what we asked of you. And what we're going to do is we're going to hold questions until the end. So that all of our presenters have a chance to contribute. So next up is Ryan Howells, who has become a good friend working at the Karen Alliance. A lot of people don't know that CARIN stands for Creating Access to Real-Time Information Now, which I think is a really cool acronym. Ryan, are you on audio?
I am. Can you hear me, Steve?
We can, yes. Please enlighten this group about what you guys are doing and how it relates to medication benefits and price and the access to that data.
Sure. So Ryan Howells, I'm a principal at Levitt Partners. We help lead a group, as Stephen mentioned, called the CARIN Alliance, which is a group of about 50 multi-sector organizations that are working to ensure that patients could have digital access to their health information using APIs and third-party applications. We have about, as I mentioned, about 50 multi-sector organizations participating, and providers and plans and pharma companies and consumer platform companies, EHR vendors and others, all with that express desire to find ways to ensure that individuals can have more digital access to their data. So as it relates to pharmacy in particular, we're working on developing a FHIR implementation guide that has to do with extracting specifically a consumer-facing real-time pharmacy benefit check standard, and I'll talk about that here in just a moment. First, I wanted to talk about the policy drivers. Margaret mentioned a few of those, the CMS final rule on real-time benefit tool that was out there as well. I want to mention another one. There's one called the Patient's Right to Know Drug Prices Act, which is actually a piece of legislation that was signed into law in the fourth quarter of last year that has to do with the ability for a patient at the point of prescribing to be able to be told whether or not the formulary price or the cash price is less, and so that essentially it removes the gag clause that pharmacies have been under for an individual patient to receive that information. There has historically really been no significant way to operationalize that for the pharmacy to actually have that information in their system, or for the patient, for example, to have that information on a mobile device or on a third-party application. And so we wanted to find a way where we could actually help to be able to operationalize that piece of legislation. As Margaret mentioned as well, the real-time benefit tool final rule is out there as well. That primarily focuses on business-to-business interchange, which is outside the scope of what CARIN is trying to accomplish. We're solely focused on business-to-consumer interchange. And there's also the CMS NPRM that is out there as well around patient access and interoperability that also mentions this ability for access to formulary and benefit information. So what we are doing, as I mentioned, is leveraging the good work that NCPDP has actually is looking to accomplish here with their balloted standard in August around real-time pharmacy benefit check, and all of the things that Margaret mentioned, formulary and benefit information, out-of-pocket cost information, therapeutic alternatives, and the other key pieces of information that's found in that standard, and mapping that to a FHIR API standard so that third-party applications on behalf of consumers could access that information digitally and aggregate that at the point of prescribing or at the point of dispensing. And our hope is that patients, along with their providers, will both have the same information at the same time, and that will allow them to make a mutual decision as to what is specifically best for them and most efficacious, as well as potentially most cost-effective for them at that point of prescribing. In addition to those core data elements that are found in the real-time pharmacy benefit check standard that NCPDP is putting together, we are also including, in line with the Patient Right to Know Drug Prices Act, an ability for patients to see their cash price alternative. We're using GoodRx and the open API that they have made available to help make that happen. That provides an ability. GoodRx has about 10 million individuals that are on their platform today. About 70% of them actually have health insurance already, and so they go through a formulary process to make that happen. And 50% of the time, the cash price is actually less than the formulary price. And so our hope is that by providing the individual patient with both their cash price alternative as well as the formulary price, they can make a decision that is best for them as it relates to the drugs that have been prescribed to them in a mutually beneficial way between them and their provider to make that happen. From a timeline perspective, I'll end with this, Stephen. We have received approval from a project scope statement perspective from HL7 to move forward with this. That happened a few weeks ago. And our hope is that we can be able to move this to ballot sometime in February, as long as the stars align and we can move forward in a deliberate way and obviously piggyback on some of the good work that NCPDP has done. Our group hopefully can be able to take that and map that to that FHIR API standard so that we can have third-party access to the information as well. So thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Ryan. That was fabulous. And the work you guys are doing is really quite impressive. I'm sure we're going to have plenty of questions from the task force. Let's take advantage of being a couple of minutes ahead. If the team from SureScripts is ready to go, I see some of you on the line here. Who's going to be leading this presentation?
Hi, this is Andrew Mellon from SureScripts. So we'll go start if you want to pull the slides up for us, please.
And Andrew, welcome. I'm glad you're here. I know Andrew from a couple of meetings, and he is a physician and deep in this space, so glad you're here with your team.
Okay, great. Well, I will be co-presenting with my colleague, Ryan Hess, who's Vice President of Product Innovation and supporting the Medication Information Services. Just very briefly on SureScripts. SureScripts is the nation's largest interoperability network. Within our network, the SureScripts Network Alliance, we connect virtually all electronic health record vendors, pharmacy benefit managers, pharmacies, and clinicians to support over 1.6 million healthcare professionals and 258 million patients in our network. Last year, in 2018, we processed 17.7 billion transactions supporting care throughout the United States. So today we'll be talking a little bit about our process to support the prescriber with formulary, real-time benefit information, electronic prior authorization. Next slide, please. So just to give you a general overview of the services we provide to support the providers, it's really a multiple sets of data that come together to support the provider at the point of care and the point of decision making. The first part of that is eligibility and formulary. So we do a real-time electronic eligibility check to determine the plan that the patient is on and what benefits they have signed up for. We align that with a formulary that is part of every electronic prescribing module. So that formulary process gives the provider that first level pass about what's on formulary for that patient and what's at the different tier levels. The next thing we do is after the prescriber prescribes or provides specificity around what they are going to prescribe, we will do a real-time prescription benefit check to determine that patient's out-of-pocket pay as well as potential alternatives. My colleague Ryan will go into that in a little bit more detail. And then for those drugs that do require prior authorization, out of this process will trigger an electronic prior authorization process to complete the process to get the medication dispensed. Next slide, please. And specifically on real-time prescription benefit, we're focused on giving that provider as precise of information as possible, so when that patient arrives at the pharmacy, they know what their out-of-pocket costs will be, and to give that provider alternatives. Now, our model and our philosophy is to give that patient the information as defined through their pharmacy benefit plan. We leave it to their insurance companies, the pharmacy benefit plans, to determine the price, to determine the alternative in a specific way for that patient based on their copay, based on where they are in the plan for the year. And we present that unaltered to the provider at the point of care. the health technology vendors, the EHRs, then present it within their prescribing process with the goal of improving provider satisfaction and reducing overall administrative costs. Now I'll turn this over to Ryan for further details.
Great, and if you could move down one slide. So this gives a snapshot of where we are with adoption on the EHR side of the network and on the PBM or HealthPoint side of the network. So what you can see on the far left-hand side, 80% of prescribers are on EHRs that have signed on for real-time benefit. That gives you some idea. The second number there is 77% for electronic prior authorization. And then the third number, the 76%, the flip side of the network. So this is how often a PBM or health plan, or how many of the PBM and health plans have signed up to deliver this information to the provider. So 76% of patients are under a health plan or a PBM that have signed up to deliver this information to the provider. The one service that's not on here is eligibility and formulary. Andrew already talked about that. That is fairly ubiquitous. So that would just be close to 100% on both sides. A provider sees it and a health plan or a PBM is delivering it. So go down one slide. A couple of insights that folks may appreciate around each of the services. So this is eligibility and formulary. This is the first service that Margaret had talked about, which is a standard.
I'm trying, I have a Macintosh at home and laptop, and I can't.
This is some survey data from an eligibility and formulary survey that we had done from providers a while back. This service has been out there for quite a long time, as I mentioned, so it is well adopted by providers. It's well utilized by providers. It's something that they're accustomed to seeing in the workflow. If you go down one slide, real-time prescription benefits. So this is the newer service, still fairly well adopted at this point. It's been fairly rapidly adopted. This gives a little bit more depth in terms of how this works. So for real-time benefit, obviously the physician selecting medication and pharmacy. We start there because there's actually, they need to have selected the medication, the strength, the dosage, the specific pharmacy for the PBM and the health plan to return pricing information. So that is, they need to have a fair level of detail in terms of what it is that's being prescribed for this specific service. This happens in real time. So the physician writes it. In real time, they send the request to us. We in turn reach out to the relevant PBM or health plan. We bring that back. We bring that information back in real time, and it gets displayed. So as literally as the prescriber is sitting in front of their computer, they type this information in. Within sub 2 seconds is the goal in which what we're doing most of the time, this information will come back and be displayed on that screen in front of them. And then that gives the opportunity for the physician to discuss with the patient as they're writing the prescription, what should be the right prescription. If you go down one slide, these are the pieces of information that are coming back. So coverage alerts, which are age, quantity limits, anything that requires a prior authorization, channel options, so retail, mail order, specialty pharmacy, member pay details. So this is the specific price that the member would have to pay is what's most often presented. We can carry through the remaining deductible as well. And then alternative drugs. So for whatever prescription was selected, we will carry back the prescription that was selected, the price for it at multiple channels, any coverage alerts. And then we will do the exact same thing for the alternatives that the PBM has supplied. So if there's, you know, three alternatives for that medication that was selected, each of those alternatives will have a price, a coverage order associated with it, an option for retail and an option for mail order. Go down one slide. And then there was an ask as we came into this meeting that we talk a little bit about some of the features that are in development around these services. So I put the three different products on the slide. On the left-hand side, on the top left, you can see real-time benefit. We continue to roll out the service for more and more PBMs and health plans. Oftentimes they have tweaks in their schema, so that is something that we're working through. The next thing that we're doing is we're bringing real-time to other market segments. So I just talked through what it looks like from a provider perspective. We have a similar service that we're rolling out now for the pharmacist. So when you show up at your retail pharmacy, what does it look like? And then there's a couple other market segments that we're working on bringing this data to as well. And then the last bullet I mentioned here is integration of additional price or benefit information. You may recall when I was further up, I had talked about bringing in the remaining deductible elements like that. As we get deeper into the service, there's different pieces of information that different people want to see, that as the service evolves, and more people may come under ACOs, that there's different things that a provider and ACO wants to see. So we're working through what should be displayed in what scenario. Going to the right-hand side, eligibility and formulary, we're spending a fair amount of time on patient matching, which I think we've talked about with some other groups, and then we're spending a fair amount of time moving into medical drug as well. So right now, much of what we've talked about is under the pharmacy benefit plan. There's a fair number of drugs that are covered under the medical side as well, and we're integrating that information in. And then on the bottom, under electronic prior authorization, we talked about a couple of different things. But we've talked about bringing the service to the pharmacy, so we're trying to improve that pharmacy-to-pharmacy, EHR, pharmacist-to-provider interaction. We're doing a little bit of, well, not doing a little bit, we're actually doing a fair amount of clinical data extraction from the EHR, and then for prior authorization as well, we're moving into the medical drug space. So again, those drugs that are covered under the medical plan, as well as potentially the pharmacy plan. So that is the end of our presentation.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very impressed how you fit that all into 9 minutes. So thank you very much. And again, I'd like to take advantage of what a great job all the presenters are doing, and let Dr. Nguyen talk to us a bit about DaVinci and how they're putting this data to use. That's going to give us a little bit more time for our discussion and Q&A. I am very much hoping that all the presenters are staying on the line and will be available to respond verbally to questions that the task force has, as I'm sure people are jotting these down furiously as I have been. So, Ken, are you comfortable if we go ahead with Viet?
Sounds good.
Great. Dr. Nguyen.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting us. My name is Viet Nguyen. I'm the technical director for the DaVinci project. I'm an informaticist and a physician, and my role is to help shepherd our use cases through the HL7 process. DaVinci is a collaborative formed under the auspices of HL7, and we include the major payers in the U.S., including CMS, a large number of providers, as well as health IT vendors. Our process is to have our community identify specific use cases that they would like us to address around value-based care and kind of administrative process improvement and clinical information exchange. And from that list of use cases, we prioritize them and then develop project scope statements and put them through the HL7 process. And with the goal of using the HL7 and FHIR process to develop FHIR implementation guides for our use cases, as well as reference implementation so that developers and the community can see what the FHIR standard would look in one implementation. And our work is around quality measures and gaps in care, as well as clinical data exchange between payers and providers, as well as process and improvement around prior authorization. One area related to this discussion that we have been working on is a FHIR representation of drug formulary. These are came from the similar drivers that were discussed before by Margaret and Ryan. And what our use case has done is to take as a starting point the formularies released through the qualified health plans and represent them as FHIR resources and APIs. And so we have drafted an implementation guide that was actually just approved to go to ballot in an early HL7 ballot beginning in a couple of weeks. And in this implementation guide. We do a couple of profiles on a list resource to represent the coverage plan that provides the links to the information about the plan and formulary, contact information, descriptions of drug tiers, and associated costs. And we have another profile on the fire medication knowledge that represents the formulary drugs. And along with that, we have two primary APIs or queries that allow an application to query a drug plan or a drug tier. And with this, we expect that we would be able to have a fire method of having an insurer represent their formulary through fire, and then applications being able to query against a plan and be able to retrieve the formulary information and be able to have the client know whether or not there are requirements for prior authorization or if it's step therapy. And we envision one use case might be that patient may want to do some shopping and be able to compare prices on different plans and coverage on different plans. And so we have this implementation guide that I'll send to the to Dr. Lane and Dr. Kawamoto to share. And then we also have a reference implementation, and because that's one of the things we do in DaVinci is to demonstrate this in code for developers. And so we'll make that available, and it's being hosted by the Health Services Platform Consortium. So I apologize, I don't have any slides to share on this, but we'll send out a link to all this information I discussed in the implementation guide. Thank you.
Thank you, Piet. That was very helpful. So we were successful in getting a tremendous panel of presenters here, all of whom really took seriously the challenge to boil down their message, and really, really appreciate the effort that was put into this. So thankfully, this gives us 45 minutes to have a discussion of this material and to think about it again very specifically in the context of the charge of our task force, which again is to make recommendations to the HITECH and to ONC regarding priority uses of health information technology and the associated standards and implementation specifications that support such uses. So I think that what I'd like to do is take some more of the presentation time that we planned and ask each of the presenters in turn to respond to a couple of specific questions. And the first one that I would have is, what do you need? You know, our task force is in a position to make recommendations and to suggest to ONC, and then ONC could suggest to CMS or to other bodies within our ecosystem what needs to be done with regard to standards, requiring them, advancing them, implementing them more consistently. You know, this is up to and including making suggestions about conditions of participation under CMS. Et cetera. So if we could, you know, going back to Margaret first, what do you need? You know, if you were sitting on the panel and asking for, you know, what you wanted for Christmas with regard to standards or their implementation, what, if anything, and there may be nothing, would NCPDP need to really move us to the next level?
Well, since you asked, I think a final rule around the safe harbor and chargebacks, the OIG proposed rule that came out, having a final rule sooner than later would be beneficial in regard to what changes we may need to make in not only our real-time benefit proposed standard, but in our other existing standards. And then since I can ask for anything, I'm going to ask that maybe CMS commit to, once the NCPDP real-time benefit standard is completed, that they commit to actually naming that in a rule, where in their current rule they didn't name a standard. They said they would look to do that in the future once a standard was balloted and approved. But having that commitment, so to speak, would be beneficial.
Great. That's excellent. Well, and feel free, you know, as other people are speaking, to think about other asks, and I'm sure we'll have another chance. Next up, then, would be, who is next? Ryan, in your world, coming at this from the patient side, what does Karen really need to catapult forward on your path?
Well, I would agree with the points that Margaret has made and obviously support those. In addition, I think that we would have liked to have seen the patient being named a little bit more prominently in the real-time benefit tool final rule. It didn't necessarily happen. There was some discussion in there about the fact that they wanted to postpone that to some degree. I think it was largely due to the fact that the standard wasn't necessarily finalized yet. And so the hope would be that as the standard is finalized, as hopefully Margaret has her wish, that it's named in the final, in an upcoming rule process, that there will be opportunities to also discuss the need for patients to also receive the same information that the physicians are receiving, either at the point of prescribing or in advance of the point of dispensing. And so I think that's one hope. And then in addition, as we leverage the work that DaVinci's done on the implementation guide for F&B, we also can expand that to look at additional ways where we can provide additional data to the patients. The hope is that we develop our kind of implementation guide over the next few months. That also could be named in the future regulation that allows for individuals to then, again, get additional access to the information that they're looking for, similar to what their physician has at that point, so that they can, again, make that mutual decision together. I think those are some kind of high-level points. We definitely don't want to lose the idea of the cash price component as well. As we mentioned, it's in law now, and we want to try to find ways to operationalize that. So finding opportunities where we can work together with industry partners as well as our public sector partners on making that available, I think, would be very beneficial.
Great. Let me sort of supplement my request to each of the presenting groups that you actually send us a little write-up, sort of your wish list, specifically related to the standards and their implementation guides and their naming in the rules. And please include as much detail as you like about, you know, which specific rules, you know, at CMS, et cetera, because, again, this group is not in this quite as deeply as each of you is. If we're going to craft meaningful recommendations, we want them to be as explicit and specific as possible. So Surescripts, you guys are in a little bit of a different situation. Of course, you're a private company, you've got a product, you've got a customer base, you know, there's all kinds of issues related to that. We really appreciate your sharing with us your functionality and your development direction. But of course, you also have competitors, or at least, you know, we hope in America that you do. So I think you have a different perspective that you bring to this discussion. But similarly, I think where, you know, you guys have really pushed this quite a long ways within your product line, where do you feel that standards need to go, need to be implemented differently so that what you're attempting can be made available really across the board, you know, to all patients, all providers at each appropriate point in the process?
Sure. This is Ryan Hess. I'll take the question. So for areas that are well developed, like eligibility and formulary, the best thing there is to continue to have the reinforcement of standards. That is a kind of a foundational service, whether it's from us or anyone else, that many of these other services are built on top of. So continued reinforcement of that as a foundational service that all sides are supporting. The recent legislation around prior authorization has been helpful. So more reinforcement of providers and PBMs, health plans utilizing electronic prior authorization is helpful. Similarly, for real-time benefits, whether it's there are two standards within NCPDP. So for the standard within NCPDP, for the standards within NCPDP, reinforcement of the adoption of those would be very helpful. Those are, you know, those are well-tested and thought-out transactions. And then, you know, the ask for things like medical drug coverage. So if the drug is covered under the medical benefit as a pharmacy benefit, it's a little bit too early for there to be standards, we think. We, you know, we're all exploring multiple ways of blending that in, including through to the prior authorization. There's multiple multiple groups trying to come up with standards that might work. So it's a little bit early for us to be asking for standards there, but a, you know, a tipping of the hat that, you know, that is an area that the government is interested in pushing forward, that's a pain point in the industry, and that, you know, once we all figure out what the best standard will be, that it'll get pushed forward, that would be helpful as well. Thank you for asking.
Great. And Viet, from your perspective, obviously DaVinci's moving along quickly and looking at balloting, but any help that might be needed from ONC, CMS, others within government to help move this forward more quickly?
Yeah, so I agree with the previous speakers that we do need to come up with shared standards, especially that, you know, utilizes the open APIs and makes the this formulary and drug information more easily accessible by the stakeholders. Since I'm a terminologist, I'll jump down just a little bit to the layer that some of the things we discovered in working on this IG. I talked to the use case leads, and a couple of things that they identified that would be beneficial in this work to share the formulary information and make formularies comparable across plans was that they found that there was a need for additional controlled medical vocabulary. Some concepts that were inconsistent across plans that they looked at were things like the pharmacy type and relating between retail pharmacies versus mail order pharmacies, concepts around the copay options, and concepts around what it means to be the difference between some plans use a 30-day dispense versus a month dispense. So I think that, these are things that are definitely tractable, but developing that controlled vocabulary so when a client application tries to compare across plans, the information is directly comparable because the filters and the controlled medical vocabulary is there. That's along
excellent.
With some of the policies discussed, that's what I would recommend.
Great. And again, I'll ask each of you to kind of write that up for us and with as much detail, links, references as possible so we know where we're
great.
Going.
We'll do.
So that brings us right on time to our discussion with the task force. And Sasha Termott has sort of thrown out the first question. Sasha, do you want to ask that verbally?
Sure. So the question I put in the chat is that I was listening to the presentation about the work being done by HL7 Fire, and I was just trying to clarify if the resource was delivering a patient-specific result or just information about the plan. And if the question doesn't make sense, I could give an example.
At this point, it's a plan level data that would be part of we envision part of a formulary service that would add additional information that would be patient-based, but that wasn't the scope of this, this IG.
So it wouldn't include information about, deductibles that the patient had already paid or not and how that might factor into the cost?
I'll be honest, I'm not the author of this IG, but it doesn't appear that that's part of this initial iteration, this first draft.
Thanks.
David McCallie, you've got your hand up, and I invite other task force members to utilize the hand raising feature.
Hi. So this discussion gives me a good opportunity to bring up the standard joke about standards, that they're so good because there's so many to choose from. We have a plethora of standards here. What would help me understand it would be a picture, and I'm not sure who's able to draw that picture, that shows sort of the sources and control of the various bits of data and how various standards are used to flow that data between the entities that process it. So it doesn't do much good, for example, to have a fire standard that is fire-friendly for consumers to access if there's no one to host the data. And that may be a function of the fact that there's no one authorized to actually have that data, or no one who currently has that data who's willing to authorize access to it. So I think the gaps that in my mind exist here is not that there's missing standards, but that there are overlapping standards and really unclear data flows. Now, we've heard pretty cleanly that there are some blockers to moving forward that are based on regulatory language. And that's useful to know, and that's obviously something that we can feed back to the HITECH committee. The OIG and CMS rules that were brought up. I suspect also what we haven't heard a whole lot about is what are some of the business blockers in terms of who's willing to share data and who's not, who doesn't want to share it. So maybe in the subsequent discussions we could get a little bit of a clue about, you know, what are the potential market failures here that are prohibiting progress. I don't necessarily have a specific question for anybody other than just wondering if there's some place where we could get a picture of how this all assembles together, because I don't know who's going to host those fire APIs, for example, or whether the NCPDP standard maps to the fire standard cleanly enough, and who would do those translations and mappings, et cetera.
Thanks, David. Does anybody have a response to David's questions, comments, musings?
At least, this is Viet, at least for the IG that we are putting in the ballot, it's intended to be implemented by insurers to allow client applications to look at their formulary. So that would be the expectation there. Currently, they can go to website and get that.
All that current information is in the PBMs who manage that under contract to the payers. Would the assumption be the payers would pull that data out of the PBMs and serve it up themselves, or would they just route it to the PBMs?
So I'm going to use the standard fire responses. There's going to be implementation considerations around architecture and how that flows through the third-party stakeholders, because we know that they're prevalent throughout this whole ecosystem. So I don't have a specific answer, but I would imagine the PBMs, in conjunction with the payers, would have this information. But how it's served up, I think it's part of looking at the broader infrastructure around directories and endpoint, finding endpoints. So I'll have to defer for the moment the specific answer to that question.
And it's interesting that the one group that has sort of seemingly solved some of these problems is GoodRx. I wonder how they've done it. Maybe we should have invited them to the call to explain how they get their data, because they come as close as anybody to have actually delivered this capability.
We certainly do have time, David, to invite them if the task force thinks that would be helpful.
Yeah, I would be very interested to know how they get their data and how they solve some of these problems, because it's quite impressive what they've done.
Terry O'Malley, your hand is up.
Thank you. First of all, Ken and Stephen, thank you for inviting an incredible group of presenters, and to the presenters, thank you. This has really been informative, and I can't thank you enough for sort of laying the groundwork for all of us. So I'd like to riff a little bit on Dave McCauley's point, and it's really an issue around coordination, sort of who's got the big picture of sort of where we're going, and who's got a picture of what pieces are in place. And part of that, I guess, is to what extent are you all coordinating your activities, or is it really a series of work streams that don't necessarily overlap consistently? I just would appreciate a sense of how tightly coordinated are you three groups with your end goal of moving pharmacy data.
This is Margaret with NCPDP, and we have agreed to coordinate with Brian and Karen in regard to the patient-facing real-time benefit check. And we also have been participating in the DaVinci project around the formulary and benefit API. Excuse me.
Yeah,
and then
I would agree with
the actively.
Go ahead, Martin.
Sorry. And SureScripts, just to bring them in, is actively participating in NCPDP and in our task groups in regard to the formulary and benefit task group, the real-time benefit check. In fact, one of the co-leads is an employee of SureScripts, and then for the prior authorization as well.
Yeah, Margaret, it's Ryan. I just want to echo your comments. Terry, there's a high degree of, I think, behind the scenes, coordination that's going on. As Margaret mentioned, HL7 and NCPDP are working very closely together on this. Karen and DaVinci are working closely together on this so that we're not overlapping in implementation guides, that we're running parallel processes that are adding to rather than duplicating specific work streams. And then SureScripts is a member of Karen, and I think they're also involved in DaVinci as well. So there's a lot of it appears as though some of these are overlapping. If we want to get into some additional detail about how they're individual work streams that build on one another, from the standpoint of folks working on specific implementation guides, building on implementation guides that are in flight or will be published soon, and then implementing those implementation guides, that's something that we've, I think, talked about and happy to bring you up to speed on, or others as needed.
And this is Viet. I can confirm SureScripts is actually one of our founding members at DaVinci. And we coordinate quite a bit.
And this is
working with Ryan.
Yeah, this is Ryan Hess from SureScripts. And I can confirm we're members, founding members of DaVinci as well. We work intimately with NCPDP, and we work with Karen. And we use all of the standard elements and then some. So we primarily work between providers, pharmacies, and PBMs health plans. So we don't do as much that's patient facing, but we use FHIR standards in our work. We use NCPDP standards in our work. We actually use ANSI standards in our work as well. And we blend them. So even within the same service, we could be using three different standards from three different bodies to execute, you know, what from a provider perspective or from a pharmacist perspective is one workflow. We weave them together. And we're happy to, you know, if it helps, there's an incredible amount of complexity here. If it helps, we're happy from our perspective, from the provider, pharmacist, PBM, health plan perspective, we're happy to create a diagram of, you know, where we're extracting information from for each of the different services, and then, you know, what standards are being carried in, if that's helpful.
Yeah, that would be very helpful, and I really appreciate that offer, because I think part of the trick in this discussion is, you know, it's awesome that SureScripts has so many smart people and is involved in all these things and is able to deliver these services, but again, I mean, you're a private company, you know, working in a competitive marketplace, so I guess the question is, how do we go from, you know, the secret sauce that you've been able to develop to to an ecosystem where these kinds of services can be made available competitively, you know, to everyone who needs them. So, I mean, that's sort of an open question I'll just leave out there. Cynthia Fisher has your hand up. For those who don't know her, Cynthia is an entrepreneur and real great patient advocate. Sorry, Ken, go ahead.
No, that was Terry. I just had a quick follow-up question. So I suspected as much, so thank you for confirming the fact that you guys are all coordinating. So is part of your message that the issue is not so much around building standards or filling gaps, it's really around leveraging powers that be to help enforce the standards that are in place, or at least choose a standard? Is that a correct conclusion about sort of where you all want help?
I think that's a key question, Terry. I don't hear anyone chiming in, but yeah, I think that's the kind of input that we'd love to hear from you. You know, in your Christmas lists is you know, if the standards are moving along a pace and the coordination is happening appropriately, is there a need or an opportunity to enforce standards or require their use differently? I mean, certainly one question that's come up for me in listening to these discussions is whether or not there is really a need to perhaps require that, you know, through EHR certification, for example, that EHRs connect to the real-time pharmacy benefit services, that they connect to electronic prior authorization services, or if there is a need or if it would be appropriate to require that PBMs make available their real-time pharmacy benefit data to the EHRs. And we saw the slide showing, you know, 76 to 80% adoption, which is pretty darn good, but it leaves a significant chunk, you know, yet unserved. You know, do we just let the market do that, or should our task force suggest to ONC that they somehow mandate that? So again, Cynthia, I think Your hand was up. Would you like to take it?
Yes, thank you. Good discussion. I would like to just weigh in, you know, representing patients, employers, innovators, that I would support having the likes of maybe in a follow-up meeting of GoodRx so that we could also learn what would be important in the standards so that innovators like GoodRx could, I like your word, catapult us further into the future efficient and convenient and transparent delivery of information to both consumers and employers. So I think from an innovation angle, I think that would be great. And I would also put to the committee on the openness of the data, the PBM data, as it relates to the interfaces also with EHR, also to look at creating that open standardized API architecture so that innovators too would have access to that data that may provide other health or combined medical services for us. And then final point, I think, is you know, as we move into consolidation of so many of the players in the industry vertically integrating, how do we as a committee make sure, and I would ask to you all, and maybe this is the likes of some tech companies or innovators to sit at the table, how do we make sure that we have the pipes and the data flow accessible without restrictive covenants such as giving percentages of companies or giving percentages of revenue flow in order to get access to this important data for patients as new apps and new technologies can get delivered. So I think that's another question, is how do we make sure that we keep the open pipes and we don't have restrictive covenants that prevent innovation for the future with such a consolidated industry. And then finally, last but not least, is for Margaret. Just for my understanding and maybe some others on the committee, you mentioned some language regarding safe harbor. Could you just elaborate on that a bit about where is there safe harbor or where is the request for safe harbor? And just enlighten us on that with respect to the CMS rule or ONC's rule.
Okay. Well, the Office of Inspector General issued a proposed rule entitled Fraud and Abuse, Removal of Safe Harbor Protection for Rebates, involving prescription pharmaceuticals and creation of new safe harbor protections for certain point-of-sale reductions in price on prescription pharmaceuticals and certain pharmacy benefit manager service fees. That's quite a name of a proposed rule. And no, I didn't memorize it. I had to read that. What is in the rule is to have those chargebacks actually be pharmacy and or consumer facing. So if there is a rebate being paid from a manufacturer to the plan or a rebate to the pharmacy, that instead of having the plan have the rebate or even the pharmacy to actually reduce the patient's cost based upon that rebate. In other words, take that rebate and apply it to the patient's out-of-pocket cost versus to the PBM versus to the pharmacy. Now, how that's all going to work is, you know, still up for we proposed three approaches, and of course, we have no idea which one will be picked or if it'll be a combination or approach totally different. But the goal of that proposed rule was to have those rebates, safe harbor chargeback, be more consumer facing and actually apply to the consumers out of pocket versus to the pharmacy or to the PBM or payer.
And then, Margaret, on your other questions, I could maybe address a few of those. They're very thoughtful. I don't know if I've captured all of them, but you asked about how innovators can gain access to the information. I think that's one of the reasons that obviously NCPDP is doing their work, and then we are doing, DaVinci and Karen are doing their work and trying to make that available via the FHIR APIs that allows for innovators to use kind of modern technologies to be able to gain access to the API endpoints, which has the data included in it. There was some discussion, and obviously all of that is open APIs, meaning that they're non-proprietary and they're available for anyone to use. And our anticipation, our hope is that we'll have multiple industry partners be able to adopt that at scale. The other point on GoodRx, Stephen, I'm happy to make an introduction with you on that team, the folks that we're working with there. Just a little bit of more color there. Part of the concern is that when an individual, a patient, goes to a pharmacy and decides that the formulary price may be too high and that they just want to pay cash, and they use GoodRx or they use other services, GoodRx is not just the only one that's out there that's doing this, but if they use other kind of discount card type services, the problem exists is that health plans don't know whether or not there's medication adherence that's occurring at the point of dispensing. And so that lack of understanding about whether or not the individual has actually been able to take the drug and using the drug, you know, it's difficult for them to capture some of that information. If the person pays cash, there's just no systematic way to capture that. And so our hope is that if we can put it in a similar API as that's what's occurring with real-time pharmacy benefit check, and some of that information will hopefully flow back through the regular systems to help health plans and others ensure that from an adherence perspective that folks have decided that they wanted to pay cash versus pay the formulary price, and that can get into the regular flow of the workflow itself from an adherence perspective. So I think it helps both parties long-term, helps the patient, it helps the plans, it helps the providers as well to know that their patients are actually have received the drug, whether they've paid cash or whether they've gone on formulary for it. And then I think the final point was around, I think those were the major points that you had mentioned, but I guess one other point on GoodRx, which is they do have a solution. I wouldn't say, I mean, certainly there's some agreements that they have with specific PBMs to David's point earlier to actually access this information, but want to be clear, and other presenters on the phone can correct me, but this information as it relates to real-time pharmacy benefit check has been around for quite some time. And the idea that, in fact, there are health plans that have put this into production already and are seeing significant benefit from it. And so I think that this idea, and it is an open standard that's there, although what NCPDP is doing is actually validating the standard so it becomes more formalized. Some folks actually got ahead of that a little bit with either proprietary standards or with just their own kind of flavors for those. And it's grateful to see us kind of getting our arms around how we kind of publish this in the future. And so the hope is that have more of a consistent way of doing this on an open standard that involves both EDI, which is mainly how the pharmacies exchange the data, and APIs, which is mainly how the apps will be able to ingest the information.
Hey, Ken, can I comment on that?
Yeah, David, your hand is up next.
Yeah, I just want to respond to Ryan because that was a great point. But to make a subtle distinction that an API itself can be open, as in the standard is publicly available for free, but the service that hosts the API could charge for it, even if it's using an open standard. So the open standards is kind of step one, but the real question to me here is, what are the business blockers that make this data either too expensive or too expensive to flow, or is just competitive forces inhibit it from flowing? You know, the fact that the standard's open is great, but if there's nobody who is willing to serve the data up for a reasonable market-driven price, the open standard won't be very useful. So we need that data flow diagram, but we also need to know what are the business, blockers or the incentivizers, depending on how you want to look at it, that either facilitate the flow or inhibit the flow of this information.
Yeah, David, I think you make a really good point, David, that that perhaps where policy may need to change is really focused on the PBMs themselves. Or the insurers, to make sure that that data is maybe being made available not only to providers, but really to consumers directly via the APIs. We are at time to go to public comment. I heard a voice trying to chime in there, so we'll take that one comment and then we'll switch over.
Just reacting to David's comment briefly is that David, I don't know exactly how this will be operationalized in terms of a business model perspective, but certainly, and I'm not speculating either on this, so to be clear, but at least in terms of what ONC and CMS has already published in their proposed rules, they've made it extraordinarily clear that patient access to their own health information should be made free and openly available. So, again, I don't want to speculate on future standards and how that would actually operate, but that's obviously been made clear through the proposed rules that have already been published.
Yeah, I agree, and that's encouraging. But so what's what are the roadblocks? Why is it not happening? That's the kind of thing that might be helpful for us to dig into a little bit, because clearly that's the right end game, but how do we get there?
This is Cynthia. I thank you for the thorough responses to my questions and support that. You know, I do think it would be helpful for the committee to understand perhaps from some of the tech innovators that sit on the other side and have had some onerous business practices requests that have prevented them from providing their technologies, so that we get a better understanding of what's happening today that is preventing it from happening. And you know, we get to the free delivery and readily available access to this wonderful plethora of information that's going to revolutionize care for the patient and quality and price reduction. And the only way we can get there is if we allow innovation to allow it to be delivered and happen. So I do think it's an important role of the committee and Stephen and Ken, I think it would be great if we could go that next level and have some of these questions brought up further and delved into to see what, if anything, we can do to keep those pipes open, let them flow, and allow for innovation.
So with that, let's go to public comments.
Thank you. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And do we have any comments in the queue?
Yes, we have a comment coming from Shelley Spiro.
Thank you. Go ahead, Shelley.
Thank you.
Shelley, can you start by introducing yourself for the group?
Certainly. My name is Shelley Spiro. I'm the Executive Director of the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative and an active member of the NCPDP and HL7 efforts. The efforts of the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative are focused on pharmacists that provide clinical services and how those services are exchanged in an interoperable manner. We've worked on several projects in collaboration between NCPDP and HL7, especially around the pharmacist electronic care plan, which includes a FHIR implementation guide. These are important for pharmacists especially those pharmacists that are involved in value-based payment models and able to measure information. I know that this task force with this session has been focused on the pricing and the dispensing of medications, but I just wanted to make this task force aware that pharmacists do provide clinical services, and we are working on those standards to make sure that we have codified information where we can measure outcomes on the encounters that pharmacists are providing with those services, which also includes information to make sure that the patient can afford the medications that they're taking, social determinants of health, and other areas in relationship to the care of the patient. And I just wanted to make the task force aware of that.
Thank you, Shelley.
Operator, any other comments?
Are there no additional comments at this time?
I'm sorry, you said...
There were no additional comments at this time.
Thank you.
Well, I think we have a few minutes. Maybe, Terry, you have your hand up, and then I'd like to follow up on one of David's comments. But, Terry, please go ahead.
Just a question. Sounds like everyone's working real hard on standards. Are there any information needs, any sort of standardized vocabulary that is missing from your deliberations or would help them?
This is Viet. We'll send this up in a write-up, but we did identify some controlled terminology needs. I think another one that I didn't mention was the drug class, and if we're going to be making some of this information available to patients, like understanding pain versus analgesic, and a lot of the terminology that we use is fairly technical or healthcare focused. So if we're going to be offering this information to patients, we need some terminology to help them understand how to read this formulary information. But we'll write this up and send it in to you.
Thank you.
This is Ken. Just to follow up on David's comment, perhaps I'd like to ask the presenters to comment a little bit more on his notion of what are the market issues and the business issues that are potential barriers. And from a health system perspective, for example, we've been really wanting to implement the the patient copay estimation capabilities at the point of prescribing, and have found that we're still at a point where we would only have about a third of our patient scripts be coverable by that. Looking at other health systems' experiences, they seem to indicate that they're not being able to see, say, like 80% coverage, like hopefully we would be able to get. Maybe folks could comment on, you know, are those temporary issues? Is it, what are the issues, given the standards and the specs that are available, that are preventing that? So comment on that from the presenters would be appreciated.
Well, this is Margaret. In regard to the standards, I mean, we provide the vehicle, the highway, so to speak, to report that type of information. And why that data is not being populated from a PBM or payer perspective, I cannot answer that question.
Yeah, I can answer. This is Ryan. So, you know, as you point out, 76% is the number we use. The missing 24% varies greatly by region. It really depends on your health plan. And, you know, there's some health plans, obviously, and PBMs that they're represented by that are not in there. The biggest driver that we see is that the health plans and the PBMs have different weights of emphasis in terms of the changes that they're looking for from a real-time benefits perspective. So what they want to achieve is different. So some of them are focused on total drug spend. Some of them are focused on PA avoidance. Some of them are focused on drug utilization review. And it's not one size fits all. So when we SureScripts went out, you know, we had three or four different big PBMs that we were talking to, and you know, we were trying to listen to everybody, but not everybody agreed on what was the most important thing to be presenting to the provider and thus driving change. So that is why some folks are trying, you know, some folks go different routes because they feel like they can get their ultimate goals better implemented.
Thank you. Very helpful.
You can give another comment.
We don't have a lot of time, but I did wanted to comment to Ryan's point about the value of dispense information. In terms of knowing about adherence, that sort of also is challenged by the fact that some patients choose to pay out of pocket for meds so that that information is not available to their payers or even some or all their providers, so that there are some privacy issues there. But thank you. So this, again, has been wonderful. Again, we are asking each of the presenters to send us their wish list related to standards and their implementation and where you think our committee might be able to make suggestions to ONC in particular, who could then potentially work with CMS and others. Thank you all for your participation. This has been a great and very informative meeting, and the task force is going to be meeting next on the 25th in 2 weeks. And we'll probably, Ryan, I'd love to take you up on your offer for an intro to the folks at GoodRx. It sounds like that would be a valuable addition to our contemplations here.
Sounds good.
Anything else, Ken?
No, sounds great. Thank you, everyone.